situation where the HOA can't hold the project hostage with unreasonable demands, and the developer can't leave the HOA powerless by not negotiating in good faith.
Sure. So we've included a condition on the project that does require good faith negotiation with the association or associations, whatever entity is in charge of those streets and street maintenance, for negotiation for a fair share agreement. A good faith effort sounds a little loosey-goosey, but it is more of a legal term than you think, and staff will be monitoring those negotiations. We won't necessarily be sitting in them, but we will be making sure that they happen and that both sides are coming to the table and being reasonable with their proposals. As with any agreements, we do require that those agreements be recorded concurrently with or prior to recordation of the map. So before those parcels, that parcel is subdivided into the 7 lots and any airspace condominiums, that agreement would need to be in place and recorded with the city and with the county for maintenance. We certainly can add that language to the condition. It is staff's practice that all agreements be recorded prior to recordation or be agreed to prior to recordation of the final map. And we can add that language to the condition if the council desires.
I'm going to add a little bit too, if I may, Mayor Pro Tem. I know this issue is important to the council, that we look out for our residents and the impacts to their community. So good faith clearly means that real proposals for assisting on Bliss and Cashin and providing resources to the HOA to cover impacts have been put on the table. So it is our expectation in this condition that the developer will meaningfully make an offer to assist in a mitigation to those streets. And so if that doesn't happen, the final map won't record. And so I think this is, we've really tried to strike a balance. We understand there's conversations occurring, but I want to make it, many of you have asked me about this. And so it is my expectation that the parties will work together and there will be financial assistance from this development to the HOA to mitigate impacts.
Thank you. And that is one of the things that I followed up with the developer on from the design review committee discussions. Okay, let me get to sort of here. For the management of the 20 units, we have some standards in terms of for any kind of short-term rental units. We have had another project, have we not, fairly recently, where there was a condition placed that they have a response capability 24/7 within a particular time or time frame. Do you happen to have language on that?
Yes, I do. I have crafted some draft language, and I'll kind of read that to you. One potential option that you have is, and excuse my glasses up and down, one potential option is that the language could, a condition language could include, the developer / hotel operator shall designate a local property owner or contact person. The local property manager or contact person shall be available 24 hours a day to respond to tenant and neighborhood questions or concerns. Where a property owner lives in the city, they may designate themselves as the local contact person. The following requirements shall apply. First, a notice shall be submitted at the time of application for the business license and transit occupancy tax certificate to the planning department and supplied to the Dove Creek HOA and property owners within a 300-foot radius of the proposed short-term hotel unit site. The notice shall include a name, address, and phone number of the local contact person and the standards for noise, parking, and maximum number of occupants permitted. And second, the name, address, and telephone numbers of the local property manager or contact person shall be permanently posted in the short-term hotel, in the short-term rental hotel unit in a prominent location. Any change in the local contact person's address or telephone number shall be promptly furnished to the agencies and the neighboring property owners.
Thank you. Okay, so that gives us an option to consider. One of the questions has been if the we understand the 20 units of short-term rental that are part of the project. Under current city, you know, we've had discussions as a council about considering some limitations on short-term rentals to manage impacts on neighborhoods. Do our current council, our current ordinances prohibit the other 71 condo units from individually making themselves into Airbnb units?
Yeah, current council policy does not prohibit that. So I know on specific projects, if that is a concern, a condition can be added that does prohibit the use of the long-term residential units for short-term rentals.
Yeah, and didn't we do something like that on Barrel Creek?
We did include that on Barrel Creek, yes.
Okay, we'll come back. Yeah, oh, yeah. Owner-occupied could still do it, so somebody could rent it out if when they're on vacation or whatever, but as long as they owner-occupied.
I believe what we allowed on Barrel Creek was more like a homestay, so you could rent a room out in your house, but you couldn't rent the entire unit out, which is generally how that language is separated in other jurisdictions.
Or I think if they added an ADU, then they could rent the ADU, but the owner had to live on the property. They couldn't just move and use it as a vacation rental.
Yeah, I can pull that language up and we can discuss it after.
Yeah, that'd be helpful to see that language later on in case that becomes something that... It certainly is something that's been mentioned in communications with us. Okay. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Thank you. And, Xandria, your first presentation, very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great to hear from you. Couple of questions. I think you touched on some of these, but I want to make sure I understood correctly. Obviously, in the letters we receive, there's a lot of concern about traffic, primarily within, you know, on the two streets. But I'm curious about regarding the Santa Barbara overpass level of service. And this might be a public works question. In terms of the studies that have been done either previously on some of the larger proposed projects or this, how impacted is Santa Barbara? You guys?
Santa Barbara is probably one of our least impacted overpass or interchanges, probably less so than San Ramon. And, this project, it's not a big commercial project like it was planned before, which generates a lot more peak traffic. So this will be spread over more time. So I don't expect this to have any real big impact on the interchange.
So along those lines, you mentioned a number, and I forget the precise number, but that this is a certain number of trips less than originally projected with the much larger previous commercial, the one a long time ago. But that in the most recent proposal, is this also less than what was put forward in the most recent proposal a few years ago?
Yes, so this proposal right now is estimated to be 929 fewer trips than what was approved for the entire subdivision for this commercial site when it was the 60,000 square feet. In 2019, there was a proposal that came forth that included 100 hotel units, 37,000 square feet of commercial. So just in the nature of the numbers, that project was bigger and had more trips generated by it than what is being proposed right now.
And generally speaking, commercial activities generate more vehicle trips than residences?
They generally can generate more vehicle trips throughout a specific daytime. So
right.
A lot of residents have peak during the morning or afternoon.
Sure.
But with businesses, because they're operating through several hours during the day, they constantly have customers coming and going from those places.
Right. And do we know in terms of the prospective businesses, obviously we don't know precisely what kind of businesses would go in here. There's a list of what's allowable. But do we have any idea of an estimated employee count? Because you have, obviously, residents who are coming and going and parking. You have customers who are coming and going and parking. Do we have any idea how many employees might be at this you know, the overall the commercial activities here?
At this time, staff doesn't have an estimate of the number of employees. When you have a chance to talk to the applicant, they may be able to provide you with some more information about any potential tenants that they've been discussing, potentially coming here, which might give us some more insight into the number of employees associated with those businesses. The uses themselves and the square footages are fairly small, so the market use is, you know, 5,000 square feet. The our restaurant use is smaller. There's a small coffee shop that's under 1,000 square feet. So we're not anticipating that there would be a lot of employees associated with those particular uses just by the size and nature of the spaces. Most of the size is going to be used for patrons and less so employees.
Okay, thank you. And then on Cashin, you're saying the original proposal and conditions written in after 2004 allowed for two entrances or exits on
Cashin. That is correct. It had two driveway entrances
right.
on Cashin.
And so this proposal, you know, lowers that to one.
Correct.
Which, I mean, I could see, you know, maybe people thinking that's a good thing. On the other hand, it's funneling more traffic through a single point. What is the advantage of that? And then there's a curve on Cashin there. And is there, and maybe this again, maybe more of a public works traffic engineering question, but what consideration, if any, have been given to, addressing, blind curves there in terms of people coming in and out of the parking lot on a curve?
I'll let our public works director address the blind curb one, if you want to do that first, and then I'll go back to the driveway.
Sure. That blind curb, there's a lot of sideline issues that going to intersections and, you know, approaching roads or any intersection of, at all. But that curve isn't that severe. I know the initial or the original previously approved project, I think I saw it coming into the roundabout, that third entrance, and that is not ideal at all. But as far as on Cashin, I don't really see an issue with a lot of the sight lines there.
Okay.
There is room there that you could potentially, put a little left turn lane or something like that in if needed. I do notice that when that approach to El Camino, it just has a couple of stop legends, and it doesn't really have, the HOA, when they redid the roads or resurfaced them or microsurfaced a few years ago, may not have put those lane markers back. So, that might be something that might be good for this project to condition them to do that.
But it's not something of great concern to you, it sounds like.
Okay. No, right. Not with the speeds. That would be expected on Cashin.
Okay. And regarding the hotel, obviously, as you mentioned previously, there was a much larger hotel facility proposed, and this would be no manager resident, and the Mayor Pro Tem addressed that question. You answered it. My concern is, I think of another similar thing towards the north end of town, wherein it has subtly, or not so subtly, turned into essentially long-term residences with a loss of the TOT revenue, it's completely changing the nature of the building at San Paolo. And my concern is, I assume there would be some substantial deed restrictions on the hotel building that cannot be turned into long-term apartments.
Yeah, that's correct. Our deed notifications and restrictions have become a lot more sophisticated since the San Paolo Inn was approved and moved forward. And so we do intend, and it is conditioned, that we record those restrictions on this property for that type of use.
Okay. And then to be clear, we're requiring the the good faith negotiations, but if I understand correctly from page 184 of the report, the original approval, this going all the way back to 2004, which allowed the change of Dove Creek from being a completely commercial parcel of 63 acres to a neighborhood with this remaining 5-acre parcel being commercial, that as part of that, the commercial parcel was excluded from maintenance responsibilities?
That's correct. That was done by the original developer of the property as an incentive for the commercial property to be developed. If we go back to 2004, there was actually a condition on the project that if the commercial pad wasn't developed within 10 years, the ownership of the pad at no cost would revert to city ownership for us to market to a developer for commercial development. We got 10 years later, and that agreement and condition was not able to be held up, but the developer did, at the onset of the project, put a lot of incentives in place to try and get to that commercial development timeline of 10 years, and that was one of them.
Well, you say the developer put it in, though, but the city approved it. The then city council approved those conditions.
Correct.
Because
In terms of the maintenance, I'm not sure that that was part of a city purview at that time. I believe that might have been the developer's choice.
Okay, because it was internal to the overall development of the entire 63
Correct.
Yeah,
that, is at their, that was at their discretion to set up as they saw fit.
Okay. Okay. And also, though, that the original agreement provides access to the use of the roads, et cetera, for the commercial parcel.
Correct, yeah. The tract map that was recorded includes a benefit of that parcel to all of the road easements that are shown on that map as dedicated.
Okay. All right. And, on the deed restriction, if I follow this correctly, our policy would indicate that, there should be 7 or roughly 10% deed-restricted units, but you're pointing out they also already be considered available for moderate income. And so why would we want to deed restrict something to moderate income if it's going to be moderate income available by design?
Sure. So we have a couple different layers. We have an old, 2003 or 2004 affordable housing policy that places certain requirements on projects that come before you for approval. We heard a couple years ago with a housing consultant that that policy was a little outdated. It also allows for the state density bonus to be enacted, which is much easier than our policy was 20 years ago. It still does require deed-restricted units. We have a brand new study that came out from SLOCOG last year that was a regional affordable by design study, and that study did find that units of a particular size in a 2- or 3-story style building are renting or selling at the moderate income rate without deed restriction, and so we are able to count those units towards our RENA, and that might be justification for not deed restricting the units. We do know that there are some concerns with deed restricted units, especially at the moderate income level, with people being able to qualify but still having enough money for a down payment, and that window is very small in our community, and we have had some issues with developers trying to find a qualifying person in the past when they are deed restricted.
Okay, thank you. And then regarding density, on page 191 of the report, you say the existing CR zoning of the site allows for a base density of up to 125 market rate units in addition to a large variety of commercial uses. That's obviously not what's being proposed here, but I'm confused and I guess a little concerned that it would allow that level of density in addition to commercial uses.
Yeah, so our commercial retail zoning district allows mixed use that's above the ground floor at 24 units per acre. So that would be a base density of 125 units, and then applicants at their pleasure when they're proposing a project can ask for density bonuses through state law that would allow them to build beyond that if they were able to meet certain site conditions.
And would parking be one of those site conditions?
Parking is one of them, but the state greatly restricts how much parking a city can ask for. I think it's one space per unit, so we would not be able to ask for more parking than what the state allows.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all for now. I might have some later after the applicant speaks.
Thank you. Councilman Gutierrez.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. I want to follow up on the HOA agreement that you talked about, Jim. At what point will this agreement need to be finalized in the process of the permitting? I see this as something that if it's waited till the, you've got all the permit or all the drawings done, you're going through the permitting process and you're almost there, that can be rushed and then someone's going to get the short end of the stick on that. Is this something that's taken care of way up front?
The timing is prior to the final map being recorded.
Prior to the mapping, but so that's long before any drawings are submitted for the whole project, or
maybe Ms. Gleason can get more specific
sure.
on that and why that's the timing.
Absolutely. So applicants can submit building permits at the same time as their final map. There's no prohibition against that necessarily. We would not allow the final map to be recorded until we are satisfied that the agreement is signed or that we've exhausted our good faith efforts and that one of the sites is being unreasonable. So we have the authority as a city to ensure that we hold that final map recordation until that agreement has been settled.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I see this is obviously very important, and I want to make sure that there is a real good faith on both sides. And a little bit more on the parking. If you can explain it, and you kind of answered my question already, but I just want the residents to understand how the city comes to a number with the parking, how the reductions are used, because I know if contractors, if you do this, you get a reduction. If you do other these things, and it plays with the number, the amount of parking, and I know that's going to be a concern on this project. So if you can kind of explain how the reduction works and how we arrived at 160, and it, you know, they're providing 18 more than what is required, but that required number is a 20% reduction, if I'm reading that correctly. And so that's where it gets a little confusing. I just want people to understand that the city has done everything that you can do on the number of parking spaces that is being provided.
Yes, so the parking calculation is based off of our municipal code parking standards for residential uses and for commercial uses, given the proposed commercial uses that they are requesting. So we take the size of the building, what that use is, and we calculate out what that parking standard is. And that's how we got the 160. The applicant is proposing to provide 178 units based on kind of market conditions and wanting to make sure that each residential unit has a parking space, that there's enough parking spaces for the commercial. So then that way it makes it a lot easier for them to hopefully bring on tenants because they're not concerned about parking issues. In order to accommodate all of those parking spaces on the site, there are a few parking spaces that are garage units, which obviously wouldn't be shared. Those would be associated with a specific residential unit. There's also some tandem spaces that are provided. In that particular situation, that would most likely be most successful with the commercial employee uses, because with residents that are not in the same household, sharing a tandem space could be very challenging to maneuver and make that work. And so that's how we come up with the parking calculations that we have. As Ms. Gleason mentioned, with the state density bonus, if the applicant was to request that, they could substantially reduce the required parking spaces that would be required. So in this particular case, with the 71 units, if they stayed around that or increased more, they could only do 71 parking spaces. And so we're definitely trying to do a delicate balancing act of making sure that there's not over parking on the site and a wasteful use of the land, but also making sure that there's enough parking that we're trying to eliminate whatever potential parking issues could result so that we don't have that spill out into the neighborhood that some of the residents have expressed concerns about.
Great answer. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. But and then I'll follow up on that, because what you said about the spilling over into the street. So right now I know a lot of the residents in the area, because their streets are really narrow, they can't park a car in front of their house. So they are using cash in to park on. Is any of that curb, well, besides the driveway areas, obviously, how many parking spaces do we know are going to be eliminated from that street that's being used right now? Because that might, you know, there's going to be less because we've got new, you know, driveway accesses and red zones and whatnot.
So there's no parking allowed on the Bliss side of the street where the project would have its driveway, so there's no parking spaces that would be eliminated there. It's a very narrow corridor where you come in and exit onto Santa Barbara Road from Bliss. On the Cashin side, it would be where the driveway is being located. So I would roughly say maybe three spaces would be probably eliminated with that driveway width there, at most. Again, that's getting closer to the intersection of Cashin and El Camino. I don't know how many cars are actually parking in that location right now anyways, but that would be the potential impact.
Okay, thank you. I just want, you know, anybody out here that is probably concerned about the parking that they understand how it's going to be affected and what we're doing about it. So anyway, that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keeping on that theme of parking, I believe there are some garages, so some of the 71 units have a garage. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, I didn't see any sort of condition in terms of requiring that those be used for cars. Do we have that?
I would have to go back and take a look if we have that in there.
I don't believe that we have included a condition for that. We certainly can include one as part of a motion.
Have we done that in other projects?
Yes, it's generally a condition on planned developments, as we have seen garages be used more and more for storage in projects.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the comments, as Councilmember Darris mentioned, are about, you know, parking and saying that the site, some of the residents feel that it's already impacted. When the 279 units were approved and developed, was there some sort of a parking reduction? Do they have insufficient parking, or did they meet the code requirement? How did that come about?
Sure. So as a planned development, they were able to look at our standards a little differently. But all of the units did provide at least two parking spaces on site. Some of the units, especially the more single family houses on the other side of the creek, do include driveway parking, as do a couple of the units on the other side. The townhomes, I'm not sure if they have two-car garages or one-car garages, but they did meet all of our standards at the time. I believe in their HOA documents, they are also required to maintain their garages for vehicles and not for storage. I know the city doesn't necessarily enforce CCNRs, but the Homeowners Association would have that authority.
Okay. So that could be an issue. We don't know, but if that's something that residents notice, they would bring up with their HOA and
correct.
See if there's a way to, you know, encourage or enforce, or however they would want to do that.
Okay. Correct.
With regards to one of the questions, one of the emails that we received is someone said, you know, that they had moved to South Atascadero in 2006, and so, you know, the traffic and everything we looked at was in 2004, and since then there have been many developments. So, you know, Las Lomas, the homes on Viejo Camino and Halcon, and others, numerous projects. So, you know, here we are 20 years later, and that question is, how are we using this, you know, 20-year-old data with all these new projects and saying that there's not going to be an impact?
Sure. So there's a couple layers from that. First of all, the project has an entitlement at a current development level, which is the 60,000 square foot of commercial with an anchor tenant. So that has a certain traffic count associated with it that is pre-entitled on the development site. And so what was done in theory was to compare those estimated trips from the ITE manual that the traffic engineers use of what is entitled currently on the site to what this project will be. And this project will be a reduction of what's currently entitled on the site. In terms of just general development in the area, when we do traffic analyses, we do look at future build out of the general plan. All of the projects that have occurred in the area, with the exception of the 17 single-family homes that the Morescos built off Viejo Camino and Halcon Road, were anticipated in the general plan. In fact, a lot more units than that were anticipated in the general plan, and we still have some areas on the south end of town that have not been fully built out to general plan density. So most of those projects were taken into account even in the 2004 traffic study that was done.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Director DeVar, you mentioned that we could potentially, I think I heard you say something on Cashin, that possibly some striping or an added lane. Could you tell us what that might look like and what the benefits would be to that?
Sure, and maybe Ms. Fuller can find a site plan that she can show. When you come off Cashin from El Camino, it's kind of wider there, and there's like a mailbox, group mailbox on the right as you come in. But there's two lanes going out to El Camino, but there's an ability. It's a fairly short distance from that driveway to El Camino, so you maybe be able to get three or four cars stacked before they go out into El Camino. But there's an opportunity where you could perhaps have a left turn lane into the project. From Cashon going if you're turning from El Camino, going into the development, taking a left into that drive to the project off Cashin, it wouldn't be able to stack a whole lot of cars in there, maybe one car queue, but might be enough. You know, if there were a lot of cars coming off El Camino at one time and one car was waiting to make a left-hand turn in, cars were coming out. So there's an ability, and this is the area that I mentioned. They're missing the lane stripes between the two lanes, you know, going out to El Camino. This would be on the north, or I guess the top right corner of the exhibit. So you can see the road there is a little wide, and that the red arrow, the ingress egress there, if you're coming off El Camino, which is on the right side of the screen here, turning in there, making a left into the project where that red arrow is, there is an ability to stripe that. And you can see where those lane that Cashin does meet El Camino, there's two stop legends there, but there's not a lane marker between, which the MUTCD does require that. So as I mentioned, I think that was missed when they resurfaced the roads here several years ago. And I have worked with the HOA here to look at different areas for no parking and all of these things. They asked me to come consult with them maybe 4 years ago, so I actually talked with them, and we kind of came up with some of those areas to make it a little bit better for site distance and those things. So we did not paint, the city did not paint red curb or anything. We just made recommendations to the HOA, and they made those red curb.
Okay, thank you. Could you, Ms. Fowler, would you bring up the list of allowed uses? Thank you. So I think as we're looking at this, part of the, you know, the idea of this is how do you create an area that is, you know, for the neighborhood to use and would be, you know, largely I think the business activity would be driven by the local neighborhood, you know, either walking there or possibly, you know, I'm sure people from Las Lomas and immediate surrounding area, but very much a local type place. So there's some things here that just seem maybe out of, you know, out of character for that. For example, you know, financial services, not that, you know, people don't need financial services in their local local area, but it just seems like we want that sort of resident serving, you know, kind of that nice activity, people coming together, having fun, families, and something like, say, financial services or business and vocational schools, while, you know, they don't create a problem for the area, I don't know that they're really accomplishing what, you know, the city or even the residents would want. Can you, is that just kind of they've standard been there, but that's something that we could take a look at and see what the feedback is from the applicant and the public?
Yeah, those uses are currently listed in the plan development overlay zone. And so because we're touching that with an ordinance this evening, you do have purview to hone and refine that list to greater detail.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to hear, especially if any, when we get to public comment, if there's any particular, you know, comments on that, and also from the applicant, if you're dying to keep in financial services for some reason, you can let us know. But I think there's a few things in there that I would really question as to if that's what we're trying to create. Okay, let's see. I think for right now. I think for right now I'm good. So why don't we do this? Let's bring up the applicant if you would like to do your presentation, and we could ask questions.
I think there's a slideshow to go with this as well.
And you might need to put on the microphone. There you go.
It should be, it's green. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm sorry, I was just motioning. There's a couple slides that we're hoping to show along with this.
There were just a couple slides that we were hoping to show along with this.
Yeah, if you could tell your name for the record.
Absolutely. I'm Tom Jess with Aris Studio Architects. I'm here representing the project. Steve Ross, who's the developer for the project, is also here, and we'll have something to add to this as well. Initially, I just wanted to first off, thank you for the opportunity to present this project. This is something we've been working on for quite a while, not nearly since 2004 or as long as this project's been going, but we have been working on it for a little while. The project and staff has been great to work with, by the way, compliments all the way around for all the departments that we've worked with. The project was presented to the DRC. We received feedback from them, incorporated that into the project, and then we went to and presented the project to the Planning Commission, received feedback, and listened to them. A couple comments that we got from the Planning Commissioners were to further engage with the HOA, and I think that that's happened, and I think Steve will speak to that in the negotiations. And there was a topic of conversation just during your questions period regarding the maintenance agreements and so forth with HOA. He can expand upon that. But it looks like we have the slides here. So what I wanted to do was just kind of walk you through a little bit of the thought process that went into this. I don't want to repeat any of the presentation that was done. She did a great job, very thorough. So maybe I'll just touch real briefly on some of the thought process. If you can go to the next slide, please. I don't have a clicker. So it was mentioned the commercial hub of it, and that's really the heart of this development is this commercial area. And this is the area that's gone under the most renovations from feedback from DRC and so forth. And so we really wanted to create an active hub here. If you can go to the next slide, please. Really an outdoor space. We created this large covered area for shade. We've addressed the fact that it's open on the west side by having the shading devices there, so it should be a really pleasant area. We can get fans going in there. The activities going along here, I mean, there's tons of spaces for financial services. A museum is going to go in there. It's going to be amazing. I'm just kidding, obviously. No, we're on board with those. Aren't what we anticipate
you
here.
You scared
either.
Me there for a minute.
No, we really just want an active place, and we really do agree with you that this is something that's going to be serving the local community, the south side of Atascadero. I think the way that Ancient Owl and that area does the northern side of the downtown, this is going to do a similar function on the south side there. If you can go to the next slide. One of the things that is on that list that we do like is the temporary events. So we've dedicated this area in front with the red area for farmers markets or craft fairs or something like that. And you can see what the purple's indicating is that you can still come in, circulate around the site, and get in and out without this center portion there. So we've delineated that with really nice pavers and landscaping to open it up to the courtyard of the commercial area, as well as the courtyard to the center portion there, the market and the deli and the coffee shop. And so if you can go to the next slide, we have a little image of what that could potentially look like there with easy ups, and kind of you can see the delineation of the paving there, the second story balcony kind of looking down into it. So really trying to really activate this area and keep this area vibrant. If you can go to the next slide, please. So this was brought up just real briefly, is that this is the gateway to the south side, the south entrance to Atascadero. So we wanted to make a monument there and something that marks that location. Next slide, please. So we went through, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 iterations of this, and this is kind of what we settled on, which was kind of reflecting what is Atascadero. So it's the natural landscape that really draws you in. It's the hills that surround you on all the sides, and brought that in there and really marked the space there with what we feel is going to be an attractive gateway element coming in from the south there. If you can go to the next slide. The pedestrian connections was something that came out of DRC, actually, and that was some feedback that we got. So right there, it's I'd love to say that it was by design, but really it was a happy coincidence that right where we meet grade is right by the bus stop. So the pedestrian connection there, if you go to the next slide, it's right at the bus stop there on El Camino is the pedestrian connection to the commercial area. So it's a really convenient way to get there, either by walking or by arriving on public transportation. Next slide, please. One of the things that we wanted to talk about was how we were trying to be responsive to the adjacent neighborhood. So it was mentioned that we could do up to 125 units as our base density here, but we chose to keep those buildings down to two stories there, so that as we abut the adjacent neighborhood where their two stories were also two stories, it's just a transition down. So that's the residential component along Cashin and Bliss is all two stories. Next slide, please. But we do have that strong pedestrian connection through there. We created a little wooden bridge that goes across there. Well, it'd be steel and wood bridge across there that focuses on the plaza area in front of the hotel. Next slide, please. So this is the view coming across from the Dove Creek neighborhood into the project. You can see you're coming across that little bridge there, and that's just a retention area. So it'd be a landscaped area that you'd be bridging across. You're, I mean, a couple feet elevation, not a big suspension bridge or anything dramatic. But next slide, please. And then the center part here, we've really tried to activate this as the outdoor activity area for all ages, actually. You know, if the area inside the commercial area is more 21 and over, kind of hanging out, having sandwiches. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but that's kind of a more adult area. This is a more fun activity area. So if you can go to the next slide, please. You can see we've kind of put some objects in there that kids can climb on. There's a grass area for you know, more casual areas, and then there's some outdoor seating with a little shade structure. Try to make this really an attractive area to as you move through the project site. And then next slide, please. That kind of concludes the slides that we had. So I promised I'd be brief, and I tried to keep to that. But I do think it's important to talk a little bit about the concept and the ideas that went into this. I did want to touch on a couple of the conditions that were mentioned earlier. One has to do with the condition number 11, which is the 20% of the units being deed restricted as moderate income. And I think that there's been a couple good points raised about the fact that these are small units and their price point is going to be within the moderate range. I believe that to be true. And the thing that we found, and the developer can speak maybe to it more specifically, but he's recently completed a project in San Luis Obispo that had similarly deed-restricted units, and they're vacant. He's having a hard time pinpointing people that fit the criteria, but that can still afford the payments and the down payment and so forth. So what we would prefer to do is price the units in that range, but open it up to local residents that want to move up, that maybe or make more than the moderate income level that strictly says by the state, or that make less but have some kind of a down payment. So anyway, we just wanted the flexibility to make sure that those units are in fact occupied and serve the community.
Mr. Just, you said condition number 11?
Sorry, 15.
Oh, okay.
15.
Thank you.
Sorry. Wrong number. 15. That's me and these glasses trying to go back and forth. Once I pass 50.
Because that does say the 20% about the.
Correct.
The
phasing.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Two 20%. So, anyway, so that's kind of. The thought process on that. It's basically just to allow flexibility. And then speaking to condition 11, that was one that was brought up and discussed at the Planning Commission about the phasing of the commercial. And I thought maybe it'd be helpful to just give a little bit of background on why we requested that instead of the original condition as drafted was that the commercial had to be the first phase to be constructed or the permits had to be drawn first. But when you get into the logistics, and not to get into too much logistics with the financing and so forth, but the way the financing works, it's not one big loan to do the whole project. What it is each phase is going to be a separate loan, and when you sell condominiums, you pay down that loan balance. So the initial phases are going to be residential. They're seen as less risky because you're appealing to a broad range, whereas a commercial, you're trying to find one tenant for each specific space. And so as you pay down that debt, it allows the banks to make additional loans for additional phases and move through. And then the other thing is, if we were to build the commercial first, you'd be trying to lease spaces in the middle of a construction site that's still going on, which isn't the most appealing. So the way that we discussed it with the Planning Commission is that It would allow us to construct the two-story residential along Bliss and Class and Cashin, and then also the center portion, the hotel portion, and then the commercial, and then finally the three-story building would be the last thing. And it kind of works from a construction phasing to work our way around that way as well. So that's kind of the background on why that was requested, and Planning Commission was supportive of that. And then just to touch really briefly, we have no objections to the limitations on the existing residential to not being short-term rentals that you were mentioning about. No objection to that. No objection to the property management language that was as drafted by staff. And so anyway, I know that Steve just wanted to touch real briefly on his recent discussions with the HOA, but thank you very much. And
thank you.
Hi, Steve Ross, Montage Development, 23945 Calabasas Road, Suite 207, Calabasas, California. So there was a lot of discussion on the fair share agreement. So we've been trying to, so that makes me a little nervous, but like I'm going to eat the mic. But we've been trying to meet with the board. We did meet with the Dove Creek board. It was arranged by their property management company, REG. We had a Zoom meeting this past Thursday, and we proposed certain fair share obligations that we would take on. They include the landscaping around the 5-acre piece, so that would be Santa Barbara, El Camino, Cashin, and Bliss. So there's a parkway around there. So firstly, it needs a little bit of love. So we would address the irrigation, we would enhance the landscaping, and then we would maintain that portion of the landscaping. And they were appreciative of that. The next item was the maintenance of the road of Cashin and Bliss. So when we go there, we're going to make, you know, we make a mess. We have trucks and what have you. So as opposed to taking on the maintenance of the street immediately, what we propose to them is once we're complete, we would repair any curb and gutter, any medians on Cashin and Bliss, both sides of the street, and then we would slurry coat, and then we were going to add the stop sign markers and what have you, and we can work with Public Works on striping there at Cashin and El Camino. I think it's a good idea. We can address that. They were appreciative. And then after we're done with our construction, then we would share in half the maintenance of Cashin and Bliss that's basically on our portion. And so they were agreeable to that. And then, let's see. Okay, the property management company's not here, but, oh, you are? I'm sorry, so they're here. They're drafting language that hopefully the board will get, you know, the beginning of next week. After the board reviews it, then we'll get it. So our intention is to get it we're not waiting to the final map to be recorded. We're trying to be proactive, and the board was receptive, and REG has been very helpful. So I wanted to address that. The only other thing I kind of wanted to mention is that, you know, in designing a project, we try to work with staff, we try to work with owners, and then the economics of development. So I just want to make sure that, and we approach it in a very genuine way. So we know exactly what we could build there, and we could come in and then get a state density bonus and really max out the property. I don't think we would be well received by the city or the homeowners. So when we designed the project, we were looking at the different impacts. So I just want you to make sure that you understand that we try to be considerate. We don't underpark our projects. our CCNRs will address parking in the garage. That's important to us. Parking is very important to us. And wherever we can, we will add additional parking. Because it's best for our residents, and it's best for the commercial. The commercial will be vacant if we don't provide enough parking. The benefit of having the shared, like, oh, we're going to have guests over, the commercial is closed, there's plenty of guest parking. So I think what the city planning has in their code, I think is it makes a lot of sense. So I just want to let you know that we didn't try to, you know, over-densify the project. We tried to be respectful, and we look forward to being good neighbors. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Actually, if you could come back. Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. One of the questions I had, one of the things that some of the, you know, homeowners have talked about is, I guess there's, Ms. Gleason, I wouldn't really call it a trail system, but there are a few sort of walking pathways from, you know, connecting some of the neighborhoods within Dove Creek, and I think there's a small pocket park somewhere. So I think some of the residents were concerned that that would be used by people of the new development and not being reimbursed. If you could maybe address that briefly and what you think what are the chances of those being heavily used by this development?
Sure. Nobody has a crystal ball. I don't know exactly what the chances are. I do know that there's that large creek that kind of bisects Dove Creek, and so there are some walking paths along the creek, the realigned creek channel, and I think a little bridge that goes over to allow the residents on the south side to go over to the north side, vice versa. There's a small pocket park and grass and gazebo area with a little bit of play equipment on the north side as well. I don't know. I mean, they're open trails and an open pathway, and so probably a resident from here could make friends in the neighborhood, and they could go meet at the park, or if they had children, although this is set up more for a young adult living situation, they could go over to that park over there. They in turn also have some shared common area and sort of children and meeting gathering space as part of their project that then existing Dove Creek residents could come use on their project. So I don't really know how you would calculate, you know, how many people from the existing Dove Creek development would come utilize the grounds on the proposed commercial and
right.
Vice versa.
And so that was kind of my question then, is that, you know, you have some amenities that all the surrounding areas in Dove Creek would be able to use, and they wouldn't be charged for that, they wouldn't be adding to the HOA, that your development would be taking care of that, correct?
That's correct. It's very difficult. Like, we don't want to keep tracks of people that are using a trail. Like, don't use, you know, our cornhole, which is like one of my favorite things to do. I don't want to be a policeman. Like, don't come to my project. We welcome all the existing homeowners to our property.
Okay. Thank you. Let me go ahead and I'll just start now, go from my left to my right. Any members, Councilmember Darrows, any questions? No. And Councilmember Borbo?
I don't have anything for the applicant. You addressed one of them. I'll have a follow-on for staff when something was said, though.
Okay. And Mayor Pratim?
Yes, so I'll stay up there. As promised, I wanted to make sure everything that I discussed this morning gets on the record. Can you confirm that the business, with the seven parcel map division, can you confirm that the business purpose for that is not the intention of selling each of those parcels to a separate owner to be separately constructed?
That is correct.
Okay. And can you talk a little bit about essentially the target market for those short-term rental units? Who are the kinds of guests that you expect this kind of a unit in this particular location would be attracting?
Yeah, so when we looked at the market, and basically there's a lot of sporting events, so we envisioned like soccer, when they travel, they would have a place to stay. They're not staying in a motel, they're staying in a place that has, you know, not only amenities, but it also has a kitchen. We have one and two bedrooms, so it can accommodate families when they come. So, you know, that's basically our target market. We haven't designed this for people that want to stay for wine tasting, as an example, when they're touring, you know, the local vineyards.
Okay. Okay. And that would, and the target market that would also include potentially guests of residents in the surround, in Dove Creek and Las Lomas and Bordeaux Apartments and so forth, who might have visiting family and so forth.
Correct.
Okay. And then with regard to the use of garages, for that we heard earlier that, that you intend to put that in the CCNRs, that the garages have to be used as garages and not storage, you know, use them for cars. Can you describe your intention of enforcing that requirement?
Yeah, so our garages, you'll see the CCNRs, and we aggressively police that because it creates a different set of problems. If you're not using your garage for your car, you put your stuff in it, then it creates a problem for parking on the other, on the rest of the development. So, you know, we tow cars, and that's what happens, and we enforce that. It's a towing people's cars is very motivating.
It gets attention quickly, I'm sure. In the changes made following the feedback that you got from members of the public and members of the Design Review Commission, that also included the establishing of a mid-block pedestrian access on Cashin, so that people in that part of the neighborhood don't have to walk all the way down to the roundabout to come over to get an ice cream or pick up a bag of salad.
Yeah, that's correct. That's incorporated into our site plan.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to know your intention with the residential units. Is that to sell them to, you know, individual, you know, families, individuals looking to purchase, you know, a home, potentially a first home or downsize, or are you intending to sell it to an investor who's then going to rent them all out? What is your vision with this?
The vision, and that's part one of the reasons we have so many legal lots, so that the homes on the buildings on Cashin, so we can create a legal lot, and that allows us to sell off. Each one of those is 16 units within a building. So when we process it with the DRE, once we get 50% sales, once we have 88 sales, then we can convey them. So our intention is to sell them. We're not, we haven't had the opportunity to build in Atascadero. We've done it quite a bit in San Luis Obispo. Our intention is to get this approved and start construction is once we get our map recorded.
Okay. What I mean, though, and it might have been clear what I was trying to say is that sometimes that, you know, you might sell an entire lot to an investor that then just rents the units out versus, and we have no control over this. This isn't a condition, but.
Right.
You know, what our preference obviously would be if it's possible, and hopefully it aligns with what you're doing. And again, it's up to you. It's nice to see when there's opportunities for people to buy homes, especially when we're looking at some of these being in that moderate range where, you know, individuals could start to build some equity. And this feels like that kind of a project where people would have that opportunity rather than it being simply another rental opportunity.
That's correct. So what will happen, hopefully our goal is that someone moves out of their first apartment and they'll buy either a one or two bedroom condominium. That's our goal.
Okay. That's what.
Then we'll build some homes and then hopefully they move into our homes.
Exactly. That's what we'd like to see.
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo.
Thank you. I have a follow-on from what Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Funk raised and then the mayor also asked about. I was a little confused about this because you talked about you would tow. And I think of towing either being like an apartment owner towing noncompliant vehicles or a homeowners association in the case of a condominium. So as the mayor said, I mean, this may not be something that we get involved in dictating, but I'm trying to understand you have a separate lot that you can sell, and within that lot you have separate condominiums that can be sold as air condominiums.
Correct.
Who's the enforcer here?
Well.